Do it
I
again, because I whispered you're gonna fail into the microphone. Hey everyone, welcome to The Streets Will Remember. I'm Justin Salhani.
And I am Hani Jabber.
How you doing, mate?
Oh, so you pull out the Australian for the episode, huh? You're giving people unrealistic expectations. They're going to be like, where'd that Australian guy go? He was awesome.
Yeah, and that was the worst accent as well. Probably insulted an entire nation.
How's it been, man? How's it going?
Yeah, it's been good. It's been good. Slowly coming back into the real world. It's been great because football's back on for the most part and we're getting to go back out and practice and socialize from that perspective. And how are things in Paris?
Yeah, I got to go out and play football last week.
Did you? Was it futsal? Was it,
no, it was,
concrete? Was it?
It was 7-a-side on a turf pitch. Got to play with the new team. Yeah, it was cool. It was cool. You're not like flowing at peak, so you don't get to throw in all the step overs and do things like that. But you know, a couple of no-look passes.
Nutmeg?
I did not secure the nutmeg.
Sounds like a failure of a day then, my friend. Sounds like an absolute failure of a day. Speaking of nutmegs, today, our first man that we'll be speaking about was definitely open to a nutmeg or two. And I think that we should give him that sort of introduction. There's not many people on this earth that don't know who he is or don't remember the legacy that he's left behind. His name doesn't get said as much as it used to, I guess, while we were growing up, and especially with Ronaldo and Messi now dominating the football environment. But this man is probably one of the greatest players to have ever existed.
Absolutely. And you've just done a really long intro without telling us who we're talking about. So can you tell us who we're talking about?
That's what I do. We are talking about Ronaldo Luis Nazario de Lima, or commonly known as O Fenomeno. Justin, what do you remember of him?
It's almost like I've got like a YouTube compilation video up in my brain, just constantly playing of him. The memories I have of him, obviously my first introduction to him was pretty much in the 98 World Cup. And then, of course, the 2002 World Cup, where he led Brazil to victory despite being kind of the second iteration of himself. I went back and I watched some clips and some highlights of him just to refresh those memories in my mind, just to remember how phenomenal he was. Because, I mean, at the time, you know, we talk about the goal-scoring exploits of modern strikers, but, you know, he wasn't necessarily the smoothest player all the time. Like, he had that really smooth kind of 1-2-3 step over, right? His legs were like these weapons of fate. His body was unpredictable, but you just knew he was going to get through.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. And I, you know, we're fairly similar in age, and my first memory of him as well was that 98 World Cup. And I was what, maybe 8 or 9 at the time. And I was just watching this player like absolutely demolish the people in front of him. He was just so enjoyable to watch. And then it was a few years after that where I was growing and becoming a stronger and stronger player. And then all of a sudden it was like he disappeared for a bit before that 2002 World Cup.
So he spent, I think, 2 years almost completely injured. I don't know if you remember the build up to that. A lot of people thought he wouldn't be able to play. They thought, you know, maybe his career was over because he had like ill-fated comebacks with Inter. It was really careful recovery from doctors with the Brazilian national team that helped him make it to that 2002 World Cup. And I don't know if you remember that World Cup. He seemed a bit heavier. He seemed a bit slower. But I mean, there was something about his play. And again, I go back to the way that his body was so unpredictable in the movement that even though he was slightly slower, he would just slide right by you. He had deceptive speed, but he still had that kind of smoothness in little bursts that kept him so unpredictable that even carrying a little bit more weight, even with the full flexibility of his knee, he was still incredibly deadly.
It's interesting you say that. I lived in Dubai for quite some time, and Maradona moved to Dubai for a little while. I think while he was coaching a team out there, Al Wasl. And I remember he showed up to a like a 7-a-side pitch, a turf pitch indoors one summer. And he was playing alongside some of the locals there. It was like 4v4, and Maradona was on one of the teams. And he was much bigger than he used to be, right? This is maybe 10 years ago. But it was insane because he would still receive the ball. And he was also gliding on the pitch. It was like that class and that phenomenal technique that just didn't disappear no matter how much he was away from the game. And you're right, that 2002 World Cup, Ronaldo was exactly that. Came from that awful knee injury at Inter and then helped them win the World Cup and was critical in that final as well to winning that World Cup. Yeah, it's just part of the reason he is known as phenomenal.
There was a ridiculous statistic that went around recently, and I don't know if this is true or not, but it said something like he had an absurd number or percentage of times that he would score a goal by rounding the goalkeeper. Whether it was true or not, it just was so believable because he was the guy who I think almost felt more confident dribbling past the goalkeeper than shooting it past him. Like, I still remember probably one of his most iconic goals was in the 2002 World Cup, again, when he's carrying a little bit more weight and, you know, not as nimble as he used to be. And he gets one-on-one with the keeper, and this was the 2006 World Cup, and he did a double step over and rounded the keeper to score. When we were researching this episode and talking to people about this episode and stuff, a lot of people talk about early Ronaldo, you know, the, let's say, 94 to 99 era, where he was just the greatest teenager and early 20s player to ever play the game, youngest Ballon d'Or winner. We weren't sure what his ceiling could be because nobody had ever seen a player like that before, right? Nobody was as good or as complete as early as Ronaldo was. You know, then we talk about how his post-injury self, how he became a bit slower, a bit heavier, still a deadly goal scorer. And because of that, people say he was the, you know, he might've been the best number nine of all time, but probably, you know, you wouldn't put him up there as the greatest player of all time because of that injury. But there's something I want to say here, which is that, first off, I didn't get to see a lot of that early Ronaldo, partially because I was growing up in the States. We didn't have access to international football matches the way that you do today, where you can just watch every game. But, you know, I do remember kind of the late Ronaldo. And in a sense, I feel more nostalgic for that one. Mostly because as well, like, the early Ronaldo was Superman. You know, like, he was unstoppable. He had no flaws. And nobody likes Superman because Superman's perfect. Even today, you see the smile on Ronaldo's face. You see the smile of, like, you know, I flew so close to the sun. And not just that, like, he flew so close, like, he danced around it. The late era Ronaldo, carrying a couple injuries, being a bit slower, still having that ability to give us all joy with that flash of a moment. That's the one that I almost feel more sympathetic to, or more, you know, nostalgic for.
Well, I think that's a good transition into talking a little bit about his history and his background. So we'll run through, I guess, what his career has looked like. And that all sort of plays into talking about, you know, what made him interesting as a young player, but also as more that mature player. So obviously we said this, you've said this already, debatably the greatest number nine to ever exist, debatably the greatest Brazilian player to ever exist. We'll debate that later. Boom. I guess the most important thing is, about Ronaldo was that he had the skills of a number 10, the lethality of a number 9, and would score so many goals. And it's probably a combination we'll never come across in that position. Started his career super young, started out on the streets playing futsal, and a lot of his technique and his vision comes from that futsal background. He's also the youngest player to ever win a Ballon d'Or. He's won 3 FIFA Players of the Year, 2 Ballon d'Ors, a UEFA Club Footballer of the Year, UEFA Club Best Forward, European Golden Shoe, 2 World Cups, 2 Copa Americas, UEFA Cup winner, La Liga, Copa del Rey. Never won the Champions League though, but what's amazing about the trophies and the awards that he's won is that they're so condensed in a specific time of his career, which is unusual for a football player, right? Because they'll start out young, they'll win a couple things here and there as a reserve, and then they'll continue to build towards this like climax of their career where they're playing for the best possible team that they could. Their international team's probably grown as much as it can. But his is so condensed in this period of time where he was absolutely the greatest around. And it was when he was young.
Yeah, he's like reverse Michael Jordan.
Yeah, he is like reverse Michael Jordan. And it's because of that, I guess, achievement at such a young age that makes him super, super interesting to speak about. Part of the interesting debate here with Ronaldo is what could have been.
Whenever you talk about Ronaldo, you're always, what if is always brought into the conversation, right? It's always, what if he had remained healthy? When you reach those heights, what's next? You know, the human mind is always looking for hope. It's always looking for the future. That's the way that we're programmed. We're programmed to think about what's tomorrow going to be like. We're working for a better future. If you've already won a Ballon d'Or by 21 and you're the greatest player in the world and you've won more or less everything that you want to win at that point, but if you are reaching that height and that pinnacle. Like, we kind of saw the same thing happen to Ronaldinho, saw the same thing kind of happen to Adriano. I mean, it tends to happen with Brazilians, but it happens across the spectrum of humanity, where you've reached a peak, and to remain at that peak is difficult because it's like, what is pushing you? What is motivating you when you've already done it all, when you're already the best? Do you need to keep going? It's almost inevitable, because like, we talk about Michael Jordan. He won those first three NBA championships, and then he retired because he was like, I'm the best. Like, what else is there to do? I think a lot of people talk about the what if of Ronaldo, and if he had stayed healthy and stayed performing at that level, would he be better than, you know, the two guys that we have at the top of the game today? Would he have had a better history, a better legacy, and everything like that? And I think a lot of people argue yes. And I've got kind of a spicy take that I'd like to share maybe later on.
Let's play a little bit of a game, Justin. How many goals did he score in his career?
No, I don't know. I forgot.
Good. Well, 247 in 343 games. Look, the number is very impressive, but the craziest bit about that is that there was a period of time where he was averaging something like a goal-to-game ratio.
If you go back to like the late 90s era and the top strikers in the world in those days, to have a 1-2 goal-to-game ratio was meant that you were an elite striker, because the way that tactics were, the way that the game was, it wasn't like it is today where we're actually seeing players score a goal a game ratio, where we have guys like Haaland come through and it's like, wow, this kid is scoring more than a goal a game. For Ronaldo to score, you know, 0.7, 0.8 during that period, it is utterly phenomenal. And he set the stage for these players that are coming today and getting near to a goal a game ratio.
I mean, it was insane. I mean, you know, watching players like Weah, Henri, Raul, you know, those guys, and they were prolific. This man was more prolific. All right, let's take a quick break and we'll come back and we'll talk about his legacy, because I think we've got quite a bit to say here.
Let's do it. All right, welcome back. We are now going to talk legacy of Ronaldo. So I think the way that I want to start off this segment is I'm going to read some tweets from our friends who we asked this question to on Twitter, and they responded back.
Right, I read a few of these. They're quite interesting.
First one comes from Adrian Kitteman, who says, I think it's his comeback story after the grief with his knees. Most people forget before the 2002 World Cup, Brazil wasn't really balling, and he came and was like the final piece and pretty much made them world class again.
Without a doubt. They wouldn't have won that World Cup without him.
Yeah, and I think, you know, his legacy is incomplete without that World Cup, because he was on the 94 team, but he didn't play. So this was what really put him up there with the greats at the time. The conversation has shifted a little bit, but if we're talking 2010, 2012, everyone said you cannot be the greatest of all time without a World Cup, particularly with Messi and, you know, the other guy never having won a World Cup. And so, you know, the conversation has started to change over the relevance, and there's a whole narrative, but we're talking back in those days when Ronaldo was playing, you couldn't be considered among the greatest of all time if you hadn't won a World Cup.
I'm not a big fan of that debate about whether winning a World Cup makes you the greatest or the best. It is what it is, and that was so critical to his legacy.
All right, we have one from Musa Okwanga, who's host of the Stadio podcast. Musa, what's up, Musa? Musa says, the GOAT number 9, the greatest pure center forward the world will ever see, who had two completely different careers and was the best in both.
Shout out, Musa, for agreeing with me.
Moving on. Imran Garda said, move like a hybrid of Jonah Lomu and Mbappe with an extra gear. Imagine Mbappe with an extra gear.
Loving the two-sport mix.
He said he had the touch of Totti, finishing of Van Basten. His feet were as fast as Bruce Lee's hands. Still the best number 9 when beset with injuries and weight gain. Apart from that, he was all right. To which I have to ask, like, what do you mean apart from that? That covers everything.
Literally covered every sport as well. Jeez. The only thing he didn't talk about was cricket.
ATP Jacob said the R9s and his World Cup goal scoring record, there were some worldies in there. First player in the game, I remember having their own line of boots. And I think that's huge because Ronaldo, and we'll get into this a bit in the legacy. When I was a kid, I had an Adidas boot that was called the Diegos. But I don't know if there was like a Maradona marketing around it, or they just named it Diego and was like, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. But I mean, you remember the Mercurials, and till this day, people still sweat the Mercurials.
So did they come out before the Beckham Predators?
Yes.
Correct. But yeah, that is a great shout.
We got one from our friend Nate Scott. He says he was unplayable, couldn't sustain it, but there were a few years there where defenders couldn't do anything. The person that size shouldn't move like that.
Yeah. I think Nate's talking about older Ronaldo.
I mean, even younger Ronaldo, right? No other player was that muscular at that time. Even when you see him in his Real Madrid years, where it's kind of 2002 and beyond, there were times where he'd just knock a ball past the defender and you're like, okay, this is going to be a foot race. And he's heavier than that other guy. But then suddenly he's just past him. We forget how fast he was, even in his later years.
Oh, he was so complete. I mean, when you look at the list of players that said that he was complete and the best player he's ever played with, it includes like Messi, Buffon, Seedorf, Salgado, Capello, the coach, Kaká, Zidane, Peter Crouch, my boy, Nesta, Klose, Van Nistelrooy. I mean, that list, every single player on that list said that he was either an inspiration or the best player they've ever played.
I'm legit going to fight you for putting Peter Crouch in that list. All right, I'm moving on here. From Adam Whitaker Snavely, he said, that video of Lilian Thuram and co. talking about him before 98 is the only time I've heard players talk about a fellow player like that. And I think you remember the infamous one where the group of French defenders are standing there kind of discussing how deadly this guy is and how scary he is. And there's a famous story where I can't remember whether it was Desailly or Maldini, one or the other, telling the other one, stay near me in the game because this guy terrifies me. Individually, Desailly and Maldini are two of the greatest defenders of all time. Maldini, arguably the greatest left back ever and one of the greatest center backs ever. Desailly, yes, without a doubt, one of the best center backs ever. And you have these two guys saying, this guy scares me so much, don't leave me alone. Have you ever had anyone in a game say, don't leave me alone?
To me?
Yeah.
No.
Of course not, because you're terrible.
I was like, is that a trick question? I'm so confused.
All right, this is the last one I got, and it's from Kasmude. Kas is the host of the Radical podcast, which everyone should check out. He says, one of the least elegant pure talents in football, amazing finisher, who was so much better and faster than he looked. And I had to ask him, like, what do you mean by he's not elegant? And so Kas replied, I remember watching him play at PSV, and the way his legs moved looked so uncomfortable. And it's kind of true. If you go back and watch, he's not the most graceful and elegant. That's why I'm saying, like, his legs were like these weapons of fate or destiny, because he didn't go in saying, I'm going to scissors and beat this guy. It was like, let's see what he does and I'll just adapt. It was also really kind of jazz and improvisational. And he also said that because Ronaldo came to PSV right after Romario, and Romario is like the smoothest, coolest striker ever.
Yeah.
Like I think Romario will let you take the ball off him before he does not look cool as fuck. Supposedly and I hope I'm pronouncing this right, but in the Netherlands, they called Romario Sloop Shooter, which means the silent killer. What Jeez. A nickname, huh?
I wish that people would call me that. I think as you were reading those tweets, I was just thinking about this. And did people hate Ronaldo? Was there like a group of people besides the Madridistas when he was playing at Barcelona, or the Catalonians when he was playing at Madrid? Because that's going to be natural. And same with Milan and Inter Milan. He was, for the most part, loved by most people, wasn't he?
I don't know if I have a nostalgic memory of this. The thing is, he played for Inter and Milan. He played for Barcelona and Real Madrid, but he didn't transfer directly between any of those clubs, as well as the fact that at that time, there wasn't this 24-hour news cycle, constantly creating content, constantly creating narratives. So I don't really remember. I mean, he was also kind of, the way he was marketed as was like this kind of smiley, sleepy, happy guy. I don't remember anybody hating him. That being said, the later part of his career, especially when Cristiano started to come through, people started to talk about the fat Ronaldo, the old Ronaldo. And even Alex Ferguson called him that at one point. So I do think there was a bit of disrespect pushed his way for a long time. And with a bit of distance, people forgot about that. Of course, later also came out about how he had actually had that condition, which forced him to put on weight. And of course, the mental. And I think athletes started to become more humanized to an extent. And so when we learned about, you know, the struggles that he had had with those injuries and everything, that also kind of flipped the script a little bit.
This is always going to be really difficult, but what do you think his legacy is? Why has he impacted the game now? Or how has he impacted the game now?
I think there's two ways to look at this. There is the marketing side, which he was the first probably global football superstar. Well, no, that's not fair because Pele was genuinely a global football superstar. He legitimately toured the world on "I am Pele and I'm coming to play in your country." Like when I moved to Beirut and I walked down the street and I found the Nejme Stadium, there's his mural painted on the side because he visited the stadium in, I think it was the 60s, and played like a friendly there. And, you know, that's how he made money later on in his career and stuff. So he wasn't the first global football superstar, but I think he was the first modern global football superstar. Pele wore the Puma Kings. Ronaldo made the Mercurials. And, you know, that kind of comes off of the Michael Jordanization of team sports. So on a marketing side, Ronaldo was the first. What people don't know is that these sort of marketing campaigns really affect our memories. And Ronaldo was in all the great ones. He was in that Brazil commercial where they're in the airport and knocking the ball around and dribbling past security and everything like that. He was in the cage tournament. You know, and obviously these are marketing executives. It's not like he was the mastermind behind it all. But like Jacob said, he was the first who had his own shoe. And that led to so many things, to the Beckham Predators, to Zidane, to the Pogba today. That's like the first strain. The second strain is in the footballing side, on the field. I mean, you mentioned the players who Ronaldo influenced. But I also think Ronaldo came around at a very interesting time. He came around at a time where a new sort of striker was coming through. And we saw this a bit with Romario, George Weah, players of this type, where it's a striker who has the ability to drop in the midfield or move into other spaces on the pitch and to carry the ball into attack. If you look at today, all the great strikers are more than just goal scorers. You know, we don't really have the Inzaghis anymore. I mean, they exist, but they don't reach the same prominence.
His influence on players, as I think, the biggest legacy that he leaves behind. You know, if you look at the crop of players that have come out since that time, you know, we're talking about Neymar, we're talking about Haaland, we're talking about Mbappe, we're talking about these guys that are now sort of running the game. You know, they grew up watching Ronaldo, and they don't hide the fact that Ronaldo influenced their ability to play. You know, we're talking about Ibrahimovic as well.
I think actually this next generation, they grew up watching Ibrahimovic, they grew up watching Messi, they grew up watching the guys that Ronaldo influenced. What you're actually seeing today is the kind of derivative, the second generation. For us, Ronaldo was doing things that we'd never seen before. For these young guys, Ronaldo is the standard. I remember there was this young rapper that came out and got a lot of shit a few years ago because he was like, honestly, I find Tupac's music boring. And everyone just kind of flipped their mind. And it's because what people don't realize is that if you were born and Tupac was already playing, for you, that's the standard. Tupac has always existed. But for those of us who it's like the first time you heard Tupac or the first time you heard hip hop music that transcended the way that you understood what music could be, that completely changes your mind. That's what Ronaldo was for football for us. But it's those creatives that are able to expand our mind in an artistic sense and realize like what else is in the realm of possibility. And I think the players today see Ronaldo as, yeah, that's what football is supposed to be. Like they can still appreciate how fucking good he was.
You know, we mentioned Michael Jordan earlier, right? Oh, we haven't mentioned The Last Dance, but you know, the reason we mentioned him is because he's now fresh in our minds after releasing The Last Dance. And Mike Tyson is posting all the time and showing videos of himself training and saying how he's going to come back. And then, you know, you've constantly got Maradona documentaries dropping every year, like, you know, just to remind us how good these guys were. We don't see that with Ronaldo. He lives a relatively quiet life. He's a, you know, majority shareholder at Valladolid and yeah, hangs out with Hatem Ben Arfa, your boy. And, you know, we don't see documentaries on Ronaldo about how incredible he was, you know, the greatness of him.
You just gave me chills. Like, I just got the idea of a Last Dance Brazilian national team 2002 documentary that also kind of flips back and forth between the 2006 and the 1998. Imagine having Ronaldo, Roberto Carlos, Cafu, Dunga, Kaká, Robinho, like Romario, all these guys kind of talking about the different dramas that was going on in Brazil throughout the time about the knee injuries. That would be a fucking incredible story. And I hope somebody decides to tell it.
Netflix, Amazon, get on that and get me and Justin as producers.
Yeah, I'll do it. Why not? I'll learn some Brazil. I'll learn some Portuguese.
Let's do it.
I know how to say
abacaxi. Let's take a boom. What's that mean?
It's pineapple. I got, because I got married in Portugal, right? And I was studying Duolingo Portuguese, and I don't think it says Brazilian Portuguese anywhere, but like I was getting really excited. For some reason, the one thing they keep saying is, you know, I'll take the abacaxi. And so I get to Portugal, I'm in like a taxi and I'm talking to the driver and I can say, hey, something, something, abacaxi. And he's like, that's Brazilian. We say ananas here, like every other country on earth besides.
Look like a dick.
Yeah. And that's when I gave up speaking Portuguese. Let's take a quick break and we'll come back with the Pantheon segment. All right, welcome back. We're going to lay out a parameter of where we will rank this player. So for example, with Ronaldo, we could do, for example, where he does rank all time as a Brazilian, where he ranks all time as a number nine, where he ranks all time as greatest player. But I want to have a bit of fun and do something a bit different and theoretical. What I want to ask you is, where would he rank all time if he was playing in today's era? And so the assumptions we're going to take here is that he has access to the same sort of nutrition, training, muscular rehab, all these sort of things that Cristiano and Messi have had. And so in that sense, you know, maybe he would have had a longer prolonged career. Let's say he was able to stay healthy and playing in today's era, where do you think he would rank all time?
First thought comes to mind is, look, Messi and Ronaldo, Portuguese Ronaldo, are extremely special players. Brazilian Ronaldo is almost like a great combination of the two. And I think if he had the same nutrition, same medical attention, was able to stay fit, and was able to play on a team that supported him, I honestly think he would be better than them. Because he had all of the skill sets that they both have separately combined. That's so, a complete, like, I haven't even thought about that. And that's the first thing that comes to mind.
I think a young Ronaldo was better than those two aforementioned players as a teenager up until he's 21. I think he's, in a sense, he's got a higher ceiling, right? However, my argument is that if he were around today, he would not reach, well, he would reach, because he did reach that level, but I don't think he would maintain it as long as those two other players.
That's saucy. Why?
Because I think he had a personality.
Okay.
this is the thing, right?
Coming in like, with a swipe.
Messi is more or less like a footballing vessel. His whole life is football. And that's true for a lot of footballers, right? He's never cared about partying. He's never cared about drugs or anything else like that. It's always just been about like, let me get on the pitch and play football. And for Cristiano, who I really feel uncomfortable talking about Cristiano in a footballing sense only because I think there's a lot more to the guy in terms of what he's done off the pitch in a very negative way. I know he's done some great philanthropic ventures, and this is not to both sides it, because I think, you know, I've read the report in Der Spiegel, and I really believe from everything that I've read that he, you know, raped Catherine Mayorga. So I just want to put that out there, that talking about him from just a footballing perspective and like ignoring these other things is not something I'm really able to do. But at the same time, his whole focus is football. So Ronaldo, Messi, they just focus on football. Ronaldo liked to party. I think he had a bit of a...
You think?
But I think beyond the fact that he liked to party as well, is just he seemed to be a more human being. You know, he had these needs beyond just being this great footballer. Like anybody with that sort of psychology, anytime you're flying that close to the pinnacle, you start to question about what else there is in life. You know, if we're talking about a FIFA player, yeah, he'll be the best to ever play the game. But if we're talking about how high you can fly and then how to maintain that level, Ronaldo wouldn't put in the same sort of effort to just physically stay at the top, because he's a more well-rounded person. There's more to life. There's more to finding happiness, you know? And I think that's something that he struggled with throughout his career. And I think he was more vulnerable in that sense, which, to be honest, also makes me like him a lot more.
I think that's a really interesting point, like the psychology that comes into play about whether he would be able to keep up with the two robots and the two machines that are Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo. Yeah, I think I would agree with you. I think you're right. I think he would get to a point where he'd absolutely dominate and he would be killing it, scoring goals, winning tournaments, prizes, and all of that type of stuff, which is kind of what he did anyways, but stay fit, and he would actually just sort of go on to enjoy his life. Whenever I think Ronaldo, I think of it like an awesome smile. Like, the guy's always smiling and he's always happy, and he seems like the kind of guy that you'd want to just chat with at a party. I think those are the elements that makes him so likable. And touching back on what we said earlier, I can't remember people hating the man, you know, or anyone ever doubting him for who he was.
With the injuries, with the weight gain, I think, you know, a lot of people felt sympathetic for him. You know, he wasn't flying high enough, long enough for people to dislike him.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. And people knew what he was capable of, but also felt bad for him, I guess, in a way.
Right. And I think teammates also really liked him and appreciated him. And it wasn't the same thing where he seemed to always be like a good influence on a dressing room. Maybe not from the most professional standpoint, but like he was, you know, he would kind of slide in and be somebody who wasn't this egotistical maniac that people kind of had to tiptoe around.
You're right. That's where he would sit if he was playing in this era. He'd be that great that towards the end of his career would be partying and having fun while these two machines just kept going and going and going. And I think on that note, we should wrap it up.
Before we end, I want to give a quick shout out to my guys, Teppo at Teppo11 on Instagram and Zach at Zach S. Moore. Teppo dropped a DC United inspired capsule, including a few t-shirts that are really cool. You should check it out. And Zach dropped a really great project. You can see what he's done over at Participation Trophy Studio or at Kicks of the Pitch. And he's just dropped a really dope thing where he cut up a bunch of US national team jerseys, sewed them together. So it's kind of like a mishmash of patterns and designs, but really, really cool done. And all the money goes towards Color of Change, working towards social justice in the United States. Check those out.
Shout out to Teffo and Zach, two very, very creative guys doing some really, really good work.
Check us out on Twitter. You can tweet me at Justin Salhani, or Hani is at This Is Hani Jabber. Leave us a review. I think we're going to be on all the podcasting platforms.
Make sure you click subscribe so that you never miss the upcoming episodes. They're going to be great.
We'll be back next week.
See ya. I'm gonna go to the hospital.